Hey, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Strand Tennis Center podcast, filled with tips, advice, tennis, not tennis, just life advice, too, whatever you need. Like it on YouTube. Share it on the podcast as well. Thank you.
Today, I have a big pleasure to introduce our guest speaker, Stephen Kapo, a visionary entrepreneur and whose contribution to the business world are both profound and inspiring. And as the founder and CEO of Strand Tennis, Stephen has not only built an exceptional front-facing racket sports service and consulting business, but also he achieved 8-figure success, demonstrating like excellent leadership and entrepreneurialism. And Stephen's influence stretches far beyond the court of Strand Tennis. As an esteemed investor and advisor, he has played an important role in the growth and success of innovative startups, such as Ping Pod and Novel Effect. Through his strategic guidance, those ventures have collectively raised more than $100 million in financing. In addition to his achievement in entrepreneurial investment area, Stephen has also made his mark in the media industry. And under his leadership, his media company has achieved a lot of success and engagement, amassing an impressive 70 million impressions and 50 million likes across various social media platforms. So, and today, so we are privileged to have the opportunity to learn from Stephen's entrepreneurial experience and insight. And I want you to ask a lot of questions and learn as much as possible. So it will be much more fun than having lecture with me, right? So ask a lot of questions and please join me giving a warm welcome to Stephen Kapo and a true entrepreneur.
I appreciate it, EJ. Thank you for the introduction. I definitely want this to be interactive. It should be more Q&A as much as you can. I want it to be real world. I don't want to be, you know, giving you just a standard kind of thing. But really, it's great that they're having entrepreneurial schools. I never had it. I went to Rutgers, and you know, as much as I paid attention, which I should have paid attention more in school, they didn't have these classes. You had no idea what to do. You had to figure it out yourself. I mean, the internet was just basically started. There was nothing, you know, it was all dial-up stuff. You can actually start businesses now. Has anybody started a business at all, like in school at all? Anybody tried something, sold something? No? So that's what I would say first with school is experiment and look around. A lot of times people go to school. I've known a lot of colleagues that have gone to Stanford and Harvard and all these great schools, and they don't look around. They get great grades, and they don't meet anybody, and they don't network. So somebody next to you may be a founder of a super company, and you don't know. So I would meet as many people as you can. I would treat college as like just a big experiment, like trying different food. Like, you don't eat the same food every day. You try different things. So I would try different things, meet different people, because you may have some sort of collab with someone that works out that you just don't know. A lot of people, again, get great grades, but they don't meet people. And that's the biggest thing with school. Try different things, experiment. I want this to be interactive, and I want this to help in many tactical ways to help you start a business if you need to, if you really want to, if that's what you want to do. Because you may find out that you're good being a number five in a business than a number one. Number one is really hard. Like, I would say a number one, I don't want to discourage anybody, but you just be aware of it. And the biggest thing is, my first question to you is, who wants to be a salesperson? Has anybody thought of being a successful salesperson? No. Does anybody want to run a multi-million dollar business, own their own life, have employees, and, you know, own a big house? I would assume they do. So if you want number two, you have to know number one. You have to know how to sell, because that's the biggest thing. When you start a business, you're gonna have to sell your employees. You're gonna have to sell your customer. You're gonna have to sell your contract. You're gonna have to sell a lot of things. So there's a lot of tactical things that you can do to practice that, to sell. The first thing I'll tell you right off the bat, and I'll do it right off the top. Usually I do this at the end, but I'll do it at the top. Has anybody heard of the Starbucks challenge? Okay, so what you should do, practice selling, and I told Santi this today, as our film guy, is great. Go to Starbucks, get a coffee and ask for 10% off. Don't ask them why you're doing it. Just go there and say, I'd like 10% off for this coffee. Somebody will look at you like you're crazy. They'll look at like you're insane, but you'll probably get it. Just get used to doing that, because that's what's going to happen. If you start a company, you raise money, you're going to have to ask and you're going to have to sell. Do it. That's the first thing you should do. And I would love to communicate with you and see how you do on that. Number two, if you're trying to find a business or an idea, as everybody's trying to search for an idea, number one, search your credit card transactions. Search your Venmo history. Find what you're buying and what you're doing. You may notice that you're spending a bunch of money on this particular thing. You're like, boy, I'd like it if it was run better. If you're spending a lot of time out to eat, if you're spending a lot of time doing things, boy, I would like it if this restaurant was better. Maybe you can find a business out of that. Go to Google Trends. That's very big to find out what is popular. That'll help you as well. And then I do the rule of threes. The guy who started Lululemon was selling ski equipment in Vancouver and took a yoga class, sold that company. He saw people asking for yoga pants. People were selling yoga pants. And he saw it three different times. He saw a poster on a board saying, interested in a yoga class. And he said, I think there's a business here. And that's how he started. He started a small little yoga selling company with a yoga studio in Vancouver, and now it's, you know, obviously a publicly traded company. So those are a couple of tactical things you can do to figure out if you don't have an idea. And I would say, in regards to ideas, the biggest thing is to find what you're good at and not necessarily find what you're passionate at. Because, like, I love basketball, but I can't play it and I'm not going to make any money at it. So find what you're good at first, and then make that into your business. Because, you know, I like tennis. I wasn't super in love with it, but I loved helping people and running a business. Tony Hsieh, who passed away, who ran Zappos, which is a $1 billion company, hated shoes. But he loved people. He wanted to help them. Zappos is famous for taking calls. There's that famous Zappos stories where they're asking for shoes, and then the person wanted to know where to get a pizza in their local area, and they gave him that information from a shoe place. So I was always passionate about customer service and helping people. So the vehicle, I was just good at tennis, helped me do that. So find what you're good at and then make that into a business. Now, the best way to do this is to find what you can play infinitely. I talk about this. It's a great book, but it's about finite and infinite games. You want to play a game that you can play forever. So does anybody know what an infinite game could be? What can you play forever in life? So a simple thing is education, right? I always feel like I'm learning. That never ends. Marriage. So if I get married, it doesn't end. I don't stop. I don't win because I got married. I keep doing it. So find something you can do. I always say find one idea that you can do for 100 years and you'll be pretty good at it. If you're going to play infinitely, you're going to beat anybody that's going to play a finite game. Finite game, again, is two players or a game that ends. It's got a beginning and an ending. A finite game means that you're going to play it all the time. So when I started this business, probably in my 20s, there was a ton of stuff to deal with. You're going to get hit in the face all the time with things. But if you just have such a passion for it that you just don't want to stop, you'll take those as part of the process. Most of success is about 80% failure. You take about 20% of that as success, you add it to the next one, you add it to the next one. But if you're willing to play infinitely, you're going to be successful. So if you have an idea, you want to do it, you're going to play it forever, the best way to do it is through this value chain. It'll really help you help your employees and help you create great value to the customer, because that's what the customer wants. Whether you're in a front-facing business, whether you're running a tech company, you have to realize what your employees need and what your customer needs. So the value chain is, you have to first define what that is. Value chain, to me, is, I wrote it down so I didn't forget. It's really important. It consists of five things. And if you can master this and do it for months, you can then increase prices and you can make more money because your value is so great. And we'll go back to Netflix. That's the reason why they can increase prices easily and you don't think about it if it's $2 or $3 more. So number one, in regards to value, you have to listen with intent. A lot of people, they run a business, they don't listen, and they don't really listen specifically. A great example of listening is restaurants. There's a restaurant, 11 Madison Park, which is number one in the world in New York. And what they'll do is they'll listen to customers. One person will say, hey, I wish I had a New York hot dog. They'll go and buy a New York hot dog and make it for them. Or they'll fill their parking meters. Those kind of things are huge. How you listen to the customer, you can overhear a conversation and help them out. That's the first one. The other one is specific high-quality information, because I can give somebody a service, but it not be specific. I could give them a random service, but it not be specific to their needs. And that's why running a small business, you have to compete with companies like Amazon now, who can know when your next thing comes and what you need and your needs. But if you can be really specific with what you can give to them, it's a great thing like United Airlines. That's why they have tons of problems, not just the planes now, but they have this service called Global Services. So if you fly 50,000 miles, you get Global Services, and you fly first class, they give you all this stuff. But one of my colleagues is, and they don't know his name, they don't know what drink he wants, they don't know what food he likes. So for that kind of service, you could go back to being very specific and really take advantage over these bigger companies. You could provide such specific service to a client, even if you only have 1,000 clients. You can create a business out of that, make enough money to live your life the way you want, and it's just 1,000 people that you can service better than any one of these big companies. And the other one is just focus. You have to have focus on the task. Chick-fil-A is great for that. I'm sure everybody likes Chick-fil-A. They have drive-thrus that are fantastic, but they build mock drive-thrus, and they just practice all the time. So if you have an idea, practice it. If you have, like, SoulCycle was great for this too. They started their company in the city, and they built a mock front desk. In the basement, they just practice people coming in and learning how to service them. So you really have to, especially with what's going on with technology now, if you're going to run a small business and it grows to bigger, you have to learn, it's called scaling the unscalable. So you're going to have to reach out to people personally, know what they want personally. All of those things are huge. The fourth one I wanted to talk about is follow-up. A company was sold. SoulCycle sold their company based on this relationship. So Equinox bought SoulCycle. A vice president went in there, took a class, loved it. The people just reached out, and they didn't ask to sell her again. They just said, hey, how was your class? How are you? They knew her specifically. And she said, this is incredible follow-up. And they started a relationship that way and eventually sold to them. So if you can follow up with people too, make sure that, you know, how did this go? Whatever you're running, a restaurant, a cupcake place, anything it is, always follow up, learn how to do that, to say, hey, how was this today? How was that yesterday? How was that last week? And the fact that you remember their name and remember who they are is huge. And then the last one is you want to audit the stability of the company. So if you're doing all these things and you're successful, a lot of times people, they start to grow, and they grow based on expectations instead of need. So always grow based on need. You don't want to grow on expectations, because people grow on expectations and go, all right, we're going to have 20 stores now, and hopefully they're busy. You want to grow based on saying, okay, we've got all these clients, we can't seem to satisfy them, let's open another location. A company, Boston Market, was famous for that. They were ahead of Chick-fil-A, but they went out of business because they overexpanded, they took a bunch of debt on, and they went out of business. So you got to be really careful about those things. And those five things are huge for the employees too. If you have a small company, if you have 20, 30 employees, you can meet with them individually. You can meet with them once every 2 weeks, the person themselves, and see how they're doing. It's the same thing. Listen, focus, all of those things apply. Because a business with 20 or 30 employees is still, it's like a family. Someone could be pissed at something and you don't even know why, and then you have a conversation with them and it kind of susses it out. The problem is when you don't talk enough to your employees and know what is going on, then it gets to a problem where there's a lot of animosity. It happens all the time. You think someone's thinking something, someone's thinking another, and nothing of the sort is true. So take those five things, apply it to your employees and your customers. That's why it's the value chain. So it goes from the owner, does the five things for the employees, then the employees should be happy and they give it to the customer. And then it keeps feeding itself. And if you can do that, you can run any business. It could be front-facing, it could be IT, it could be anything. You have to do that. That's a great example of Airbnb. They were having a lot of trouble understanding what people wanted, and then they just flew out to one of their locations in New York. It was when they just started. They had a couple of apartments in New York, and And they were like, went in there and they're like, wait a minute, all these pictures are wrong. People aren't, like, they have to go out and find out what your employee needs. Sometimes you just forget that, what your customer needs. But I can keep going, but if you have any questions, let me know.
Yeah.
But we can.
I mean, because it is a filming, so I'm afraid that I didn't want to interrupt you.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead,
Sam. Yeah, so say if you have an employee and you're not really connecting with them very well,
yeah,
yet they actually have very good performance in your company, and you can't really just, when you have a one-on-one session with them, it just, whatever you're saying doesn't go through with them.
Sure.
What's your options?
Okay, you have to figure out, like, we've let go of people that are very successful, but they don't get along with anybody. I may not have a connection with them, but they get along with everybody. So you have to see how they do in the environment. Like, I've had employees that do a great job, but they piss off everybody. So what you have to do is understand that maybe it's you. Look at yourself and go, maybe I just don't connect with this person, but they do a great job. But if you allow an employee that's kind of a cancer because they make money, allow them to stay, it's going to ruin everybody else. And then you're going to lose 10 other employees because they're like, well, the boss is not getting rid of this person. They're no good. But if the employees like them, you got to say, maybe it's just me. Maybe I just don't connect with the person, but they do a good job. See how they do in the whole environment. That's what I would say. There's another question over here. No? Yeah.
So my grandfather owns a company, and something he's always said was, you don't have to know how to do it. You just have to know they're doing it wrong.
Okay.
Would you say that's generally true when it comes to dealing with employees? Like, you know, if someone's doing something and you don't necessarily need to do it better than them, you just have to know that the way they're doing it isn't necessarily the right way to do it. And, like, how do you balance the idea of telling them what to do or just outright knowing what to do and trying to guide it, I guess,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
That's
a good question. Yeah, I think you have to know, as the founder or owner, you have to know enough about every job that you can know that, say, all right, this is not being done right. But the fine line is telling somebody they're doing something wrong all the time. What you always want to do is give them a suggestion in the positive. So say, hey, how about we try this or do that, instead of saying you're doing this or this wrong. I think your grandfather's totally right about knowing everybody's job, but always say it in the positive. And that's with learning anything. If you teach a tennis lesson or you teach something, always teach in the positive. Don't tell them what they're doing wrong, because subconsciously they'll just repeat that. Just give them solutions. So that could help. Because you can sit in a meeting, like you can sit in a meeting and talk about all the crap that's going on that's bad. If you don't find any solutions, everybody's walking away feeling frustrated. So, yeah. But as I'll just keep going, but as you go through this, oh, I'm sorry, I got another question. Somebody else? Yeah, no worries.
Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Much appreciated. So you brought up like having sales knowledge is crucial to starting a business that would be successful. So I work in partnerships now, which obviously like involves around like organizational stuff, sales management, pretty much everything. My curiosity was, as I'm kind of trying to branch into sales, like what's your biggest takeaway in terms of like skill that you need to have and skill that you gained over that period of time
in sales? I would say sales is just volume you could read a ton of sales books, it's mostly just action. So if I'd rather have a salesperson, we do a 100-day challenge, right? So you reach out to 100 people in 100 days each day, and you'll get answers that way. Like I'll go through, when I was doing sales myself, and I still do them, you figure out the solutions as you're going through them. So like that's why I said everybody do the Starbucks challenge, or do something that you can ask people for money. Like literally, if you want to start a business, ask people for $10 to say, I'm going to start this thing. So get used to what you're asking, what the pitch is, and you'll say, boy, I screwed that up there. This is not right. So I would just say volume will solve the problem for you, and you'll just come up with answers. Because the sales books, like they're good, but you have to take the action to do it. It's like, again, it's like shooting a basketball or hitting a tennis ball. I could tell you how to do it, but if you don't do it, so I would just do all those challenges and get yourself uncomfortable. That's what I would do.
You were mentioning earlier today to find something that you can keep playing forever.
Yeah.
What challenges or obstacles can you find to like keep enjoying that forever? I mean, wouldn't you get tired of playing the same?
Well, listen, I have to be straightforward. It gets frustrating, right? Listen. There's two levels to this. You could be self-employed, So you could buy yourself a job. So you could run a business and do everything and say, okay, I bought myself a job, but usually you get burnt out afterwards. It's hard to do every job. So you have to start outsourcing the things you hate. It'll make the job. So I only do the things that I really enjoy. There's going to be some things I don't like. So I hire people that really like if somebody's going to spend 100% on accounting and they're good at it and I hate it, they're going to do it a lot better. So as quickly as you can, you want to offload the things you do not like. So if you're running a business and you just cannot stand, maybe you don't like talking to customers, you don't like being at the front, you don't like doing it, you hire someone that's great at it and loves to do it and loves people to keep it happy. So like, if you could, what do you like to do? What's your favorite thing to do, you think, hobby-wise? Okay. So if you like hiking and walking your dog, you may not like different parts of, you know, maybe preparing for it or doing all that stuff. So that would be kind of it. Like, I like to hike, but I don't want to search for all the gear and all that stuff. Someone do that for me and buy it and give it to me. So that's just like running a business. So you have, you know, we're running this front-facing racket sports business that does everything from social media. We have a media company. We do this stuff. So there's certain things in that between behind the scenes that I just don't like to do. Like I'm terrible at accounting, like I said. I'm terrible at like organizing certain schedules for the employees. Somebody else does that. And I get to do things like this. So as soon as you can, I would say offload what you don't like and you'll still enjoy your business as it's running. Yeah.
So, I mean, it looks like, to become a successful entrepreneur or CEO, we need some people skill.
Yeah.
Like we need to love interacting with people, even within, within my employees, within my organization. So if I find that I'm not a really people person,
yep.
then I'm disqualified as a CEO or entrepreneur.
Yeah, I'd say you can do that. You can be an inventor. In other words, there's a lot of great inventors. They invent something, and they just hate running a business, and they hate running the CEO. So they license the idea to somebody. You can do that. Like, you can say, oh, I just still want to be the IT person, right? That's why Wozniacki and Steve Jobs were great. Jobs was a front-facing guy. Wozniacki just wanted to build a computer for Apple. He didn't want to deal with people. So it worked. You can have a co-founder that deals with all the stuff you don't want to deal with. So it happens a lot. People start ideas, they sell them off, or they just still want to do the technical part of it and let somebody else run the business. Happens a lot. But when you go through this, you're going to go through, say you start a business, I call it like the cycle of choices. You're going to have this excitement with the start of the business, which you all do. The first year, the first 6 months, it's great. And then you get a lot of stuff that happens to you. And I call it like uninformed optimism and then informed pessimism in the next cycle. And then you start to switch the idea. Now, try not to do that. Because what's going to happen is a business is like a child. It's going to take 0 to 3, then 3 to 5, then 10 to... It takes 10 years for it to be anything. So if you keep switching, you're going to restart. So don't do that. That's the biggest thing. There's exceptions to every rule, but most of the time people just quit too soon. So you're going to have an idea. It's going to be frustrating. Things are going to go bad. You have to just say, what am I going to do? This one thing, if I'm committed to it for 100 years, I will do it. Because people switch too much. That's the reason why people aren't successful. They just keep switching. And they see this other idea. Oh, I'll get into cryptocurrency. I'll do this. I'll do that. They all get into other stuff, and they just don't stick with it. And that's a huge thing.
I mean, bridging off that, what are your thoughts on like keeping doors open to an extent? Like in terms of like opportunity here and there? Because there's a lot of theories that, I guess, go against keeping your doors open because you're not going to be the master at one.
Sure.
To an extent. But where do you see yourself in, like, I guess, your career in terms of keeping doors open?
Well, I think it just happens. I think you keep your core competence, right? So we still have this business, and now we've done 3 different things. We started a media company. We did this. I think you need to keep your core competence. I don't think you should be, and you branch off of what your core is. I think having all these ideas is kind of a recipe for kind of disaster if you don't stick with you. So if I got an idea, this business has been running for 15 years, right? So off of that, I start different ideas that keep me interested, right? Because yeah, sure, maybe you'll get bored with an idea that's just the way it is, but you want to work from that base. That's what I would say.
What are your core values, and like, how do you like to challenge yourself?
That's a good question. Well, what I really like, again, is people, and that's the biggest thing. That's really a core value of mine, is to help as many people as I can, and that's why it's not necessarily the racket sport. It's being able to transmit information to help people do what they want to do. You know, that's the best thing, and my core values just do the right thing. I always say, it's always short-sighted if you do the wrong thing to try to get ahead. Just do what's right. If you make a mistake, own it up and say that you made a mistake and didn't do the right thing. I've made plenty of mistakes with employees. Santi knows. Everybody knows. We all make mistakes. Just own it. The problem is we make mistakes and we don't own it. And we point fingers at other people when it's really our fault. And you have to realize that it's all your fault if you're in charge. If you're the number one person, it's you. So always blame yourself because you hired everybody. So if you're you got an employee you're complaining about, you got to say, boy, it's my fault too because I hired this person. So I would say core values, just take responsibility for everything. Because if you do that, then you're in control of your life. If I say that employees make me unhappy, they're in control of my life. So take control of your own life and say, listen, it's all up to me.
I mean, I just want to jump in. I totally agree. Yeah. Like I say the same thing to my son as well. If you blame somebody, you don't learn,
yeah,
right? So you have to own it, right?
Yeah.
So that you can learn. There got to be some kind of learning point.
You just give them all the power, right, when you blame them.
Mm-hmm. And so it might be beneficial to understand your career path. You didn't create a company right after college. So,
I'll go through that. I thought I wanted to play professionally. That didn't work. Really quick, you figured that out right away. So then I was a journalism major, and I worked for Bloomberg in New York. I thought I wanted to be a sports writer, so I did that. But it wasn't interesting enough for me. I thought it was a little stale. But Bloomberg is really a business outfit. So I was next to all business people, and I was like, boy, I combined both of these. Where I'm doing sports, I love tennis, I love business. So I started just working on the side. It's very simple. It was nothing special. I just started teaching people, doing consultations while I was working somewhere else. And this is why you don't have to quit everything. And that's why college is good. You can try this. I was already out of school before I thought of this. I didn't like quit everything, which I don't agree with, and just said, all right, I'm just going to try this thing. I was doing lessons and consultations while I was working from 9 to 6, and then I would work on the weekends and I'd get an extra, and then all of a sudden I had too many people and I was too busy. So that's the way I would do it. If you were going to get a quote unquote regular job, do that first. Get a job. If you don't have an idea right away, and then play around with an idea. And if it works and you're too busy, and that's what happened, I got too busy. And the other job I wasn't paying attention to, and they were like, you're out of here because you're not focused, because I was doing this other thing. So that's what happened. I did this other thing, and then there's still tribulation. So I had this other thing. Then I started to lease out space where I could do that other thing. And then the other people didn't like that I was doing that in their space, and they said, you have to go. And then I had to find another space with these clients within 6 months. And finding a 40,000 square foot building is very difficult to find, but when you have sometimes no other option, you figure it out. So that's what happened. So I had a little business on the side, it grew, I moved, I quit this job, and then I started something else. Then I found a building that I could only teach in the back. This place was a florist, it was like nothing. I had like 8,000 square feet to be able to accommodate people, and slowly but surely, we got the rest of the building. And in that time, there were so many different things that happened, so many different town things. You had to fix this and fix that. I would say it's like you're a fireman more than like running a business, because you're putting fires out every day. And that's why I always say it's almost like a PSA for an entrepreneurship too. You have to understand that there's always 15, 20 balls in the air all the time. And you have to be comfortable with doing that. Some people just aren't. And you know, people don't like chaos, and that's what it is. It's a lot of chaos if you're running a business. Even super successful ones, there's always something. I mean, look at OpenAI. They just got sued by Elon. All this stuff. Everybody's suing each. You know, all these things go on. So, yeah. So it got to that point. Then we expanded the club all the way to 50,000 square feet. Now we do consultations. We have another business inside it that we're investor of, which you were talking about, Ping Pod. Then we have a gym inside it now, and then we also have consultant work outside of that. We do that. And then we started a media company where we do all online stuff because, again, like you said, when you start a business, you get into constraints. If you're running a restaurant, you only can serve a certain amount of people, and you have to figure out either you expand or you figure out how to, and that's why we're doing stuff online too. So you'll get to a constraint point too, and you got to decide whether you want to grow and expand, or you like where your life is, or you want to be bigger at it. So, and I always mention the handbag idea. So if you're selling handbags handmade, your biggest constraint is how many you can make. So you have to figure out, and that's where the value chain helps. If you can make an incredible handbag, you can charge more money for it. I know people that do handmade stuff and they sell them for $5,000 a piece and they have a living. So there's a lot of different ways to look at this. I would say, but find something that you're good at first. And the game plan's really easy. It's the discipline that's hard. Like for us, you teach a lesson, somebody pays for it and they leave, right? But that's the game plan, right? But the discipline is really hard. So you'll have the two easiest things to do to me in life, or say like working out and finance, right? You're supposed to just eat right and work out every day. But it's a $1 trillion industry because no one has the discipline to do it. So they hire trainers, they take pills, they do all this stuff. Finance, you just save 10% of your money, you put it in an index fund and you'll be rich in 20 years, but no one wants to do that either. And that's why the discipline of those things are really hard, but those game plans are easy. And that's how you can run a business. Just keep disciplined, disciplined, and disciplined. So try to do those. I would try to do those challenges if you could. I'm at Steve at Strand T. Steve at StrandTC.com. I'd be curious how it goes. Try it. Go to Google Trends too. Good. Sorry.
You have several businesses right now. So you are working as an investor. You are running media companies, and
yeah,
you are also having your like tennis, racket, the business. And then like, what do you enjoy the most?
I'm starting to like advising other companies. So I'm investing in other companies and advising them, because you get a little experience and then you start to invest in those companies. And try to stay in your circle of competence. And that's the problem too, is people think they know everything. I don't know much. I know a couple of things. So I only invest in companies that are front-facing. A lot of them are racket sports. And a lot of them are customer service businesses. And then I can advise for them. And that'd be good. If you ever invest in startups later on down the road, you can get a lot of advisor shares that way. If you do a great job, you don't have to invest much money. You can just give them great advice. And that's what I like to do. I like to give companies a lot of good advisor advice.
You mentioned you manage like multiple companies. How would you like manage, like how would you like manage those companies and like organize them? Like say that you have like 99 companies you need to manage.
Elon's got 7. I don't know how he's
But
to me, I mean, my first thing is thinking of Berkshire Hathaway, like Warren Buffett and Munger, who just passed away. They own tons of companies, but they have great managers and they don't run them. So they decentralize it. So to me, I trust people to run what they're supposed to do. And then we just kind of see where their numbers are. Like, as if you micromanage it, you wouldn't be able. I don't know how Elon does things like that. He's like sleeping on the floor of factories and stuff like that. And it's crazy how he can do that. But most companies are run by hiring great management. And then you see where the numbers are at each quarter, and then you reevaluate. So that's what you just got to hire good people and trust them to do their job.
So actually, I had a question in terms of delegation. So how can you trust someone? Is there some kind of evaluation criteria? So when you delegate some kind of important responsibility to that person?
Well, usually someone's track record is their answer. So you'll see, you're talking about how do I trust someone to run something.
Right.
Usually you see how they've done in the past in other places, and you go, oh, let's give this person a chance. And then the numbers figure themselves out. Like I was telling them, you'll figure out within a quarter or even sooner, within 2 quarters, whether this is working out or not. But usually their track record. You want to know someone's future to look at their past. That's what I say. Yeah.
Okay. What's your end game, professionally and personally?
Peace and love, peace and love. My end game. Listen, it's to me, it's that's infinite again. Like, I just want to keep having a business that runs and being able to, oh my God, spend time with family. I'm going to do business until I die. Like, I don't think it's ever going to stop because I can't think of anything else to do. So the end game is to just being able to keep it going, to be able to pay bills, to be able to do this. That's really it. And that's the way it should be. You should, if you have an idea, you should just be like, I just want to do this forever because I have nothing else I want to do. Listen, like so many people say it, so many super, you know, successful people, they sell their company, they take 2 weeks off and they lose their mind. Like, I don't think you can play golf and relax all day. That's just not me. Maybe some people can, but yeah, I think the end game is to just keep the game going as long as I can and to keep playing and investing in things and helping people out and doing maybe another side business and this and that because it's just fun.
So when is the right time to start a business? Like in college or right after college or like 5 years after?
I think it's like marriage. You just, there's no right time, but I think you can, experiment now. I think it's awesome. I think when I was so late in college, I didn't do it. Like, I just thought, oh, I had no idea. They didn't have any of these classes there. Nothing. You didn't have an entrepreneurial school. I was majoring in journalism and English, and it was like half the classes were a waste, to be quite honest with you, because I maybe it was because of me. I didn't know what I wanted to do, or I felt like they weren't tactical enough. This is great, a real tactical class. But I think you should start, if you really are interested, if everybody's interested in starting a business, you should start today and just, again, do anything you can do to say, hey, okay, what do I buy? Do I buy Nikes all the time? Like, what, think about what you're wearing and think about the brand that you're wearing. Really think about how you can start a brand, because that's the really thing that's going to last is brand. Because the way technology is, the way the phone's going to work, the way everything is just going to be fed back to you. If everything goes the way it should and voice takes over and all of those things and ChatGPT, they're just going to feed you what the brand you like. You're not going to have anything else. So I would think about all the stuff you wear and think about like a chair. Like, there's more than one chair. There's more than one hat. Figure out how you can make something interesting and try it. I mean, but Swell started in school. In Harvard, my friend's colleague started that. She just started selling water bottles, you know, and that's how quick it is. There's somebody in Elon that's selling Elon sweatshirts, but in a different motif, and she's selling a ton of them. She's making like $500 a week or $1,000 a week, like stuff like that. I don't know. Go to a local event, go to an FDU thing, go to something and sell something differently. Sell, and you could just go online, you can go on Alibaba and you can get shirts printed on them and give it a shot. That's what I would say. I would say start today if you really want to do it. That's what I would do. Or find someone you can collab with again, immediately.
You mentioned like AI and all that.
Yeah.
Shenanigans.
What do you... Oh crap, I'm blanking out. Okay. What do you think, like... Do you think, like... AI can like change the business world or like any sort of way, or just like, I don't know.
I think AI is a serious thing, yes. I don't think AI is going to take over the world. I think it's going to streamline your business. I think you're going to be able to eliminate 5 or 6 things, but you're still going to need to manage the AI to do it. You shouldn't have to, like I was talking to a company that they're, you know, the search engine through AI, but you have to feed in the information. So you're still going to have to do that. But I think they said the same thing. They said the same thing here with, in the past, I think it was, what was it? It was... what business was going to lose a bunch of, like the farmers were going to lose a bunch of jobs, or I forget, it was like a car company. But what happens is they just became different jobs. A lot of the times they just change. You don't necessarily lose the job, it just becomes something different. So I wouldn't say AI is going to just destroy the workforce. I'm going to say it's going to make you have to be more specific in what you're going to do. But no, but it is, it is pretty intimidating at some point.
I mean, just to add it, AI is an opportunity for entrepreneurship, frankly speaking. So maybe other discipline like writing, they might be scared of having those types of technology, but the biggest issue in entrepreneurship is the resource, right? Resources. We don't have a lot of time. So I think entrepreneurs, they should utilize the technology to be more productive. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that to write a report using AI, but what I'm saying is that if you want to do something, then you need to figure out that how you are going to utilize the technology for your business. So actually, a few weeks ago, we did an elevator pitch. So everyone come up then they presented their business idea. So you need to figure out how to use the technology in your business to make more productive.
Does anybody have an idea they pitch that they really want to do? Or is it just like, does somebody really want to do one of these ideas? I'm just curious.
Anyone share your idea?
Yeah, what's the idea?
My business pitch was for a social media brand for tattoo companies. So it's a place where people can connect with artists and they can discover an artist either in their area or if they're traveling somewhere that specializes in their style of tattooing or something that they're interested in getting. And artists pay a subscription fee and they can display their work and list their styles and everything that they do, and also have like a chat room that you can talk with the artist, and it kind of skips jumping through the hoops to find, there's only really a few celebrity artists that have big names through Instagram or other social medias, and there's no like true tattoo oriented social media for potential clients to seek out tattoo artists.
See, that's a cool idea. Like, it's taking, like, they have those services for tennis, like you can find a coach. But you're taking it for, that's the perfect idea. It's like a different chair. It's awesome. Like, you know, and tattoos are big, right? That's a cool different idea that you can experiment with. That's great. Like,
any other business idea that you want to share? Anything that is related to your final business model project? It's a great opportunity to get feedback from real entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So how would you start that idea?
I would go on GoDaddy.com, right, get the website domain, and figure out a way to connect with either local artists to start and get them to post their information, and probably gather as many emails for different shops as possible and get them to register, and then have it be freemium. So at first, artists can just post all their stuff on there and gather clients, but eventually they can pay a subscription-based fee to have their search. Like, if somebody said New Jersey, like, okay, you're the top artist in New Jersey, and here's all your art, and do it that way.
Now, do you see yourself more as the technical part of this? Like, because you need to build an app and all that stuff.
Right, that's not my...
So your end is the selling part of it.
Right, the selling part.
And negotiating with...
Communications
and stuff like that. So you just need to find somebody, or, you know, find an app developer. Yeah,
right.
That's the part. You find a co-founder and you do it, and you can do that today.
Yeah.
Great. So we have time to take one more question if you have it, and then I need some time before you finally to explain the assignment. Any question? Anyone to? Okay, then I'm going to use the...
Yeah, go.
So, any last advice that you want to share?
The only thing I'll say is take a simple idea and take it really seriously. That's it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be complicated. Like I said before, take a simple idea and take it really seriously and you'll be successful. You don't have to have anything super complicated.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So let's give
Thanks,
a round of
Thank you. Hey, everybody. Hope you liked the podcast. Please share it with your friends, anybody that you know, anybody that's into tennis, anybody that's into bettering themselves, share it.